Chapter 44. The Color of Trust. Once Fannin had gone to tell the band to sit tight, Matt found that not an inn remained in Saladar, but was taken over by Aes Sedai, and the five stables were all full to bursting. Yet when he slipped a little silver to a narrow-jawed stableman, the fellow had the sacks of oats and bales of hay shifted from a stone-walled yard that was fine for six horses. He also showed Matt and the remaining four men of the band places to sleep in the loft, which was little cooler than anywhere else. "Ask for nothing," Matt told his men as he divided the rest of his coins among them. "Pay for everything and accept no gifts. The band isn't going to be beholden to anybody here." His false air of confidence communicated itself to them, and they did not even hesitate when he ordered them to fix the banners out the loft door, so they hung down in front of the stable, crimson and white, the black and white disc, and the dragon, plain to everybody. On the other hand, the stableman's eyes bulged, and they almost danced as they demanded to know what Matt was doing. He only grinned and tossed the narrow-jawed fellow a gold mark. "Just letting everybody know for sure who's come to call." He wanted Egwene to realize he was not going to be pushed around, and sometimes making people see that meant you had to act like Jack Fool. The trouble was, the banners had no effect. Oh, everybody who walked by gaped and pointed. A number of Aes Sedai came just to look, cool-eyed and expressionless. But he more than half expected an indignant demand to take them down, and that never materialized. When he returned to the little tower, an Aes Sedai who somehow managed to be prune-faced despite smooth, ageless cheeks, shifted her brown-fringed shawl and told him in no uncertain terms that the Amarlan seat was busy. Perhaps she could see him in a day or two. Perhaps. Elaine appeared to have vanished, and so did Avienda, but no one was crying murder yet. He suspected the Aiel might be somewhere having a white dress pulled over her head. All the same to him, if it kept the peace. He did not want to be the one to tell Rand one had killed the other. He did catch a sight of Nynaeve, but she ducked around a corner and was gone by the time he reached it. He spent most of the afternoon looking for Tom and Julin. Either one surely could tell him more of what was going on, and besides, he needed to apologize to Tom for his remarks about that letter. Unfortunately, nobody seemed to know where they were either. Long before nightfall, he concluded that they were being kept out of his way. Egwene really did mean for him to stew, but he intended to let her know he was not even simmering. In aid of that, he went dancing. It seemed that celebrations over a new Amarlan were supposed to go on for a month, and though everyone in Saladar seemed to be working at a run during the day, once darkness fell, bonfires were lit at every street crossing, and fiddles and flutes appeared, and even a dulcimer or two. Music and laughter filled the air, and festival reigned until bedtime. He saw Aes Sedai dancing in the streets, with carters and stablemen still in their rough clothes, and warders dancing with serving women, and cooks who had put aside their aprons. No Egwene, though. The Amarlan bloody seat was not going to caper in the streets. No Elaine or Nynaeve, either. And no Tom or Julin. Tom would not have missed a dance with both legs broken, unless he was deliberately kept away. Matt settled down to enjoy himself, to let everybody see he had not a care in the world. It did not work exactly as he wished. He danced a short time with the most beautiful woman he had ever seen in his life, a slim yet buxom armful who wanted to know all about Matt Cawthon. Very flattering, especially when she had asked him to step out. But after a while he noticed that Halima had a way of brushing against him, a way of leaning to look at something, so he could not help seeing down her dress. He might have enjoyed it if not for the fact that she glanced at his face every time with a sharp eye and an amused smile. She was not a very good dancer. She kept trying to lead, for one thing, and he finally begged off. It should have been nothing, but before he had gone 10 paces, the fox head went icy cold on his chest. He spun around, looking furiously for anything at all. What he saw was Halima staring at him in the firelight. Only for an instant before she seized a tall warder's arm and whirled back into the dance, but he was sure he had seen shock on that beautiful face. The fiddles were wailing a tune he recognized. At least, one of his old memories did. Not very much changed, considering the passage of well over 1,000 years. The words must have changed altogether, for the old words that echoed in his head would never have found favor here. "Give me your trust," said the Aes Sedai. "On my shoulders I support the sky. Trust me to know and to do what is best, and I will take care of the rest. But trust is the color of a dark seed growing. Trust is the color of a heart's blood flowing. Trust is the color of a soul's last breath. Trust is the color of death."
"Aes Sedai?"
a plump young woman said contemptuously to his question. She was pretty, and he might have tried for a bit of a kiss and cuddle in different circumstances.
"Halima's just Delana Sedai's secretary. Always teasing the men, she is, like a child with a new toy. Teasing just to see if she can. She'd be in hot water to her neck 10 times over if Delana didn't protect her."
"Give me your trust," said the queen on her throne, "for I must bear the burden all alone. Trust me to lead and to judge and to rule, and no man will think you a fool. But trust is the sound of the grave dog's bark. Trust is the sound of betrayal in the dark. Trust is the sound of a soul's last breath. Trust is the sound of death." Maybe he had been mistaken. Maybe she had just been shocked that he walked off. Not many men would walk away from a woman who looked like that, no matter how she teased or danced. That had to be it. But that left the question of who and why. He looked around at the dancers and the people watching from the edge of the shadows and waiting their turns. The golden-haired hunter for the horn, who seemed familiar when spinning by with a particularly lumpy-faced fellow, her braid almost standing out behind her. Matt could pick out Aes Sedai by their faces. Most of them he could, but there was no way to tell which had tried to... whatever it was she had tried. He strode on down the street to the next bonfire, as much to get away from that song as anything. But it went on through "The King on High" and "The Lady and Lord" to "The Love of Your Life" in his head. In that old memory, he remembered writing that song because of the love of his life. Trust is the taste of death. At that next corner, a fiddler and a woman with a flute were playing what sounded like "Fluff the Feathers," a good country dance. How far could he trust Egwene? She was Aes Sedai now. She must be if she was Ammerlin. Even a ragtag Ammerlin in a ragtag village. Well, whatever she was Egwene. He could not believe she would strike at him out of the dark that way. Of course Nynaeve might, though not to injure him, really. His hip still hurt, though. The bruise had made a knot. And the light only knew what a woman like Elaine might do. They were still trying to chase him away, he decided. He could probably expect more attempts. The best thing was to ignore them. He almost hoped they did try again. They could not touch him with the power, and the more they tried and failed, why, the more they would have to see he was not to be budged. Mirella came to stand beside him, watching the dancers. He remembered her vaguely. He did not think she knew anything dangerous about him. He did not think so. She was not as beautiful as Halima, of course, but still much more than merely pretty. Flickering shadows washed her face, so he could almost forget she was Aes Sedai. "A warm night," she said, smiling, and went on in such a casual way while he enjoyed looking at her that it took him some time to realize what she was getting at. "I don't think so," he said politely when she gave an opening. This was what came of forgetting. Aes Sedai were Aes Sedai. She only smiled. "There would be many advantages, and I would not try to pin you to my skirts. Many advantages. You've chosen a perilous life, or had it chosen for you. A warder might have a better chance of survival."
"I really don't think so." "No, but thank you for the offer."
"Think on it, Matt. Unless... has the Ammerlin bonded you?"
"No. Egwene would not do that. Would she?" She could not, so long as he wore the medallion. But would she if he did not have it? "If you will excuse me," He gave her a shallow bow and walked quickly to where a pretty blue-eyed young woman was tapping her foot to the music. She had a sweet mouth, just right for kissing, and he bloody well wanted to enjoy himself.
"I saw your eyes, and I couldn't help coming over. Will you dance?"
Two ladies saw the great serpent ring on her right hand, and then that sweet mouth opened, and a voice he recognized said dryly,
"I asked you once whether you'd be there when the house was burning down, boy, but it seems you make a habit of jumping into fires. Now go away and find somebody who wants to dance with you."
Swan Sanjay. She was stilled and dead.
She was glaring at him with some young woman's face she had stolen, was what she was, and wearing an Aes Sedai ring.
He had asked Swan Sanjay to dance.
While he was still staring, a willowy young Domani woman swirled up in a pale green dress, thin enough for the light of the bonfire to silhouette her through it. Giving Swan a frosty look that was returned with interest, the Domani all but snatched him out among the dancers. She was as tall as an Aiel woman, dark eyes actually a little higher than his.
"I am Leanna, by the way," she said in a voice like a honeyed caress, "in case you did not recognize me."
Her low laugh was almost a caress, too. He jumped and nearly fumbled the first turn. She also wore the ring. He moved by rote. Tall or not, she was a feather in his hands, a gliding swan. But that was certainly not enough to stop the question that kept popping in his head like an illuminator's fireworks. How?
How under the light?
To top it all, when the dance was done, she said,
"You are a very good dancer,"
in that stroking voice, and then kissed him about as thoroughly as he had ever been kissed. He was so shocked he did not even try to get away. Sighing, she patted his cheek.
"A very good dancer. Think of it as dancing next time, and you will do better."
And off she went laughing, back into the dance with some fellow she snagged from the onlookers. Matt decided he had had as much as one man could take in a night. He went back to the stable and went to sleep with his saddle for a pillow. His dreams would have been pleasant, except that they all involved Mirella and Swan and Leanna and Halima. When it came to dreams, a man just naturally lacked the sense to pour water out of a boot. The next day had to be better, he thought, especially when Dawn found Vannin in the loft to sleep on his saddle. Talmanis understood and would hold where he was. Warders had been seen watching the band's preparations, no doubt letting themselves be seen, but no one had come near the band. A less pleasant surprise was finding Alvar's gray in the yard behind the stable, and Alvar himself curled up in his blankets in a corner.
"You need somebody to watch your back," he told Matt darkly. "She cannot be trusted."
There was no need for him to name Avienda. Alvar had no interest in playing with the children in the village, so Matt had to endure the stares and smiles as the boy trailed him around Saladar, doing his best to imitate a warder's flowing stride and looking nine ways at once for Avienda, who was still nowhere to be seen any more than Elaine or Nynaeve. And the Ammerlin was still busy. Tom and Julin were also busy. Vannin managed to hear a few things, but nothing that made Matt happy. If Nynaeve had really healed Swan and Leanna, she would be worse than ever. She had always had a large opinion of herself, and after doing what could not be done, her head would be bigger than a dew melon. Yet that was the mildest of it. Loghain and the Red Aja made Matt wince. That sounded the sort of thing no Aes Sedai would forgive. If Garth Bryn was leading their army, it was no mob of farmers and street sweepings, with a few warders for stiffening. Add in the foodstuffs Vannin saw being wrapped or stuck in barrels for travel, and it sounded like trouble. The worst kind of trouble Matt could imagine, short of finding one of the Forsaken across the table from him, and a dozen Trollocs coming in the door. None of it made them any less fools. It made them very dangerous fools. Tom and his "help them make it work." If the Gleeman ever came out of hiding, maybe he could pull a "how" out of one of his tails. In the evening, Morella spoke to him again about becoming a warder, and went a little tight around the eyes when he told her hers would be the fifth offer he had refused since sunup. He was not sure she believed him. She flounced off in as much of a huff as he had ever seen from an Aes Sedai. It was true, though. The very first, while he was still trying to eat breakfast, had been the very Delana that Halima worked for, a stout, pale-haired woman with watery blue eyes who came close to trying to bully him into it. That night he stayed away from the dancing and went to sleep with music and laughter in his ears. They sounded sour this time. It was mid-afternoon of his second full day in Salidar, when a girl in a white dress, pretty and freckled and working very hard at an icy dignity that she almost reached, found him with a summons, and it was exactly that.
"You will present yourself before the Amarlan seat at once."
Full stop, and not another word. Matt motioned to her to lead. It seemed proper, and she seemed to like doing it. They were all there in that room in the little tower, Egwene and Nynaeve, Elaine and Avienda, though he had to look twice to recognize the Aiel woman in a blue dress of fine wool with a lace collar and cuffs. At least neither Avienda nor Elaine was trying to strangle the other, but they were both stony-faced, which made them no different from Egwene and Nynaeve. Not a flicker of expression in the four, and all eyes on him. He managed to hold his tongue while Egwene laid out his choices as she saw them, sitting behind the table with that striped stole draped on her shoulders.
"Should you think you can do neither," she finished, "remember that I can have you tied to your horse and returned to your band of the hand. There is no room in Salidar for slackers and malingerers. I will not allow it. For you, Matt, it's either Ebudar with Elaine and Nynaeve, or off to see who you can impress with flags and banners."
Which really left no choice at all, of course. When he said so, nobody's expression changed. If anything, Nynaeve grew more wooden. And Egwene just said,
"I'm glad that is done, Matt. Now I have a thousand things to do. I will try to see you before you go."
Dismissed like a stable boy, the Amarlan was busy. The least she could have done was toss him a copper. That was why Matt's third morning in Salidar found him just outside it, on the cleared ground, between village and forest. "They may stay right here till I get back," he told Talmanis, glancing over his shoulder toward the houses. They would be coming soon, and he did not want any of this getting back to Egwene. She would try to drive a spike through it if she could.
"I hope so, anyway. If they move, follow wherever they go, but never close enough to frighten. And if a young woman named Egwene shows up, you ask no questions, just take her and ride to Camelin if you have to cut a hole through Garth Bryn."
Of course, they might be intending to go to Camelin. There might be a chance. He was afraid it was Tar-Valon they were aiming at, though. Tar-Valon and the headsman's axe.
"And take Nerim with you."
Talmanis shook his head.
"If you are taking Nalissian, I will be offended if you do not let me send my man to care for your things."
Matt wished Talmanis would smile once in a while. It would help to know when he was serious. He certainly sounded serious. Nerim stood a little distance off with Pips, and his own short, plump brown mare towering over him, and two pack horses with wicker panniers stuffed to the top. Nalissian's man, a stout fellow named Lopin, only led one pack animal in addition to his hammer-nosed gelding, and Nalissian's tall black stallion. That was not all the party. No one seemed ready to tell him more than where to be and when, but in the middle of yet another talk about becoming a warder, Morella had let him know it was now all right for him to communicate with the band, so long as he did not try to bring them nearer Salidar. That had been the last thing in his mind. Vannin was there this morning because he could probably spy out the lay of the land anywhere, and a dozen cavalrymen chosen from the band for heavy shoulders and having kept order well as Red Arms back in Meyrone. From what Nalissian said, quick fists and cudgels should be able to quell any inconvenience Nynaeve and Elaine got into, at least long enough to spirit them away. Last of all was Alvar, on the gray he had named Wind, which the leggy animal might even deserve. Oliver had been no hard choice. The band might well find trouble if they actually had to follow that lot of mad women. Maybe not trouble with Bryn, but enough nobles would bristle at two armies crossing their lands to provide nightly attempts at the horses and arrows flying from every second thicket. Any city had to be safer than that for a boy. Still no sign of any Aes Sedai, and the sun beginning to bake above the treetops. Matt jerked his hat down irritably. "Nalesian knows Ebu Dar, Talmanis." The Tyran grinned through his sweat and nodded. Talmanis's face did not change. "Oh, all right. Nerim comes." Talmanis inclined his head. Maybe he had been serious. At last there was a stir in the village, a group of women leading horses. Not just Elaine and Nynaeve, though he had not expected anyone else. Avienda wore a gray riding dress, but she looked at her lean dun mare more than doubtfully. That hunter with the golden braid showed more confidence with a heavy-haunched, mouse-colored gelding and seemed to be trying to convince Avienda of something about her mare. What was either of them doing here? There were two Aes Sedai as well. Other Aes Sedai besides Nynaeve and Elaine, he supposed he should say. Slender women with white hair, which he had not seen on an Aes Sedai before. An old fellow trailed after them with a pack horse in addition to his own mount, a stringy man without much hair, and that gray. It took Matt a moment to realize he was a warder, with one of those color-shifting cloaks hanging down his back. That was what being a warder meant. Aes Sedai worked you till your hair fell out, then probably worked your bones after you were dead. Tom and Julin came not far behind, and they had a pack horse, too. The women stopped some 50 paces to the left with their aged warder, not so much as looking at Matt and his men. The gleeman glanced at Nynaeve and the others, then spoke to Julin, and they led their horses toward Matt, stopping short, as if uncertain of their welcome. Matt went to them.
"I have to apologize, Matt," Tom said, knuckling his mustaches. "Elaine put it in no uncertain terms that I wasn't to talk with you further. She only relented this morning. In a weak moment some months back, I promised to follow her orders, and she flings it in my face at the most awkward times. She wasn't very pleased that I had said as much as I did."
"Nynaeve threatened to punch my eye if I went near you," Julin said glumly, leaning on his bamboo staff. He was wearing a red Terrabonner cap that could not give much protection from the sun, and even that looked glum. Matt looked toward the women. Nynaeve was peeking at him over her saddle, but when she saw him looking, she ducked behind her horse, a plump brown mare. He would not have thought even Nynaeve could beat Julin down, but the dark thief-taker was a far cry from the man he had known briefly in Tyr. That Julin had been ready for anything. This Julin, with a permanent furrowed brow, looked as if he never stopped worrying.
"We will teach her some manners this trip, Julin. Tom, I'm the one has to apologize. What I said about the letter. It was the heat talking, and worry over fool women. I hope it was good news."
Too late he remembered what Tom had said. He had left the woman who wrote that letter to die. But Tom only shrugged. Matt did not know what to make of him without his gleeman's cloak.
"Good news? I haven't puzzled that out yet. Often you don't know whether a woman is friend, enemy, or lover until it is too late. Sometimes she is all three."
Matt expected a laugh, but Tom frowned and sighed.
"Women always seem to like making themselves mysterious, Matt. I can give you an example. Do you remember Aludra?"
Matt had to think. "The illuminator we kept from getting her throat slit in Arengil."
"The very one. Julin and I met her during our travels, and she didn't know me. Not that she failed to recognize me. You say things to a stranger you travel with to get to know them. Aludra did not want to know me, and even if I didn't know why, I saw no reason to impose. I met her a stranger and left her a stranger. Now, would you call her a friend or an enemy?"
"Maybe a lover," Matt said dryly.
He would not mind meeting Aludra again. She had given him some fireworks that proved very useful.
"If you want to know about women, ask Perrin, not me. I don't know anything at all. I used to think Rand knew, but Perrin surely does."
Elaine was talking with the two white-haired Aes Sedai under the hunter's watchful eye. One of the older Aes Sedai gazed in Matt's direction consideringly. They had the same sort of bearing Elaine did, cool as a queen on her bloody throne.
"Well, with luck, I won't have to put up with them long," he muttered to himself. "With luck, whatever they're doing won't take long, and we can be back here in 5 or 10 days.
With luck, he might be back before the band had to begin shadowing the mad women. Tracking not one army but two would be easy as stealing a pie, of course, but he did not look forward to any more days in Elaine's company than necessary.
10 days, Tom said. "Matt, even with this gateway, it will take 5 or 6 just to reach Ebu Dar. Better than 20 or so, but..."
Matt stopped listening. Every shred of irritation that had been building since he first laid eyes on Egwene again came to a head at once. Snatching off his hat, he stalked to where Elaine and the others were. Keeping him in the dark was bad enough. How was he supposed to keep them out of trouble when they told him nothing? But this was ridiculous. Nynaeve saw him coming and darted behind her mare for some reason.
"It will be interesting traveling with the Ta'veren," one of the white-haired Aes Sedai said.
Up close, he still could not fasten any age to her, yet somehow her face conveyed an impression of long years. It must have been the hair. She could have used the other for a mirror. Maybe they really were sisters.
"I am Vandine Namella."
Matt was in no mood to talk about being Ta'veren. He was never in that mood, but certainly not now.
"What's this nonsense I hear about 5 or 6 days to reach Ebu Dar?"
The old warder straightened, staring hard, and Matt reevaluated him as well. Stringy but hard as old roots. It made no difference in his tone.
"You can open a gateway inside of Ebu Dar. We aren't any bloody army to scare anyone. And as for popping out of air, you're Aes Sedai. People expect you to pop out of air and walk through walls."
"I fear you are speaking to the wrong one of us," Vandine said.
He looked at the other white-haired woman, who shook her head as Vandine said,
"Nor Adelius, I fear. It appears we are not strong enough for some of the new things."
Matt hesitated, then settled his hat low and turned to Elaine. Her chin came up.
"Apparently you know rather less than you believe, Master Cawthon," she said coolly.
She was not sweating, he realized. No more than the other two, Aes Sedai. The hunter was staring at him challengingly. What had put a bee in her ear?
"There are villages and farms around Ebu Dar for 100 miles,
Elaine went on, explaining the obvious to a fool.
"A gateway is quite dangerous. I do not intend to kill some poor man's sheep or cows, much less the poor man himself."
He hated more than her tone. She was right, and he hated that too. He was not about to admit she was, though, not to her, and searching for a way to retreat, he saw Egwene coming out of the village with 2 dozen or more Aes Sedai, most wearing fringed shawls. Or rather, she came and they followed. Head held high, she looked straight ahead, that striped stole hanging about her neck. The others strolled along behind her in little clumps. Shiriam, wearing the blue keeper's stole, was talking with Mirella and a bluff-faced Aes Sedai who managed to look motherly. Except for Delana, he recognized none of the others. One had gray hair in a bun. How old did Aes Sedai have to be for their hair to go completely gray or white? But they were all talking among themselves, ignoring the woman they had named Amarlin. Egwene might as well have been alone. She looked alone. Knowing her, she was trying very hard to be what they had named her, and they let her walk alone with everybody watching. "To the pit of doom with them if they think they can treat a Two Rivers woman that way," he thought grimly. Striding to meet Egwene, he swept off his hat and bowed, making the best leg he knew how, and he could flourish with the best when he had to.
"Good morning, Mother, and the light shine on you," he said,
loud enough to be heard in the village. Kneeling, he seized her right hand and kissed her great serpent ring. A quick glare and a grimace directed at Talmanis and the others, and hidden by Egwene from those behind her, had them all scrambling to kneel and call out, "The light illumine you, mother," or some variation. Even Tom and Julin. Egwene looked startled at first, though she hid it quickly. Then she smiled and said softly, "Thank you, Matt." For a moment he stared up at her, then cleared his throat and stood, brushing off his knees. Shiryam and all those others behind Egwene were staring at him. "I didn't expect you out here," he said in a low voice, "but then it seems there are all sorts of things I didn't expect. Does the Amarlin always see people off on trips? You wouldn't by any chance want to tell me what it's all about now, would you?" At first he thought she might. Then her mouth tightened for an instant, and she gave a slight shake of her head. "I will always see friends off, Matt. I'd have spoken with you before this if I was not so busy. Matt, do try to stay out of trouble in Ebu Dar." He stared indignantly. Here he went kneeling and kissing rings, and she told him to stay out of trouble, when the whole point was for him to keep Elaine and Nynaeve with whole skins. "I will try, Mother," he said wryly, "but not too. Shiryam and some of those might be close enough to hear. If you will excuse me, I must see to my men." Another bow, and he backed away a few steps before stalking over to where Talmanis and the rest were still on their knees. "Do you mean to stay there till you take root?" he growled. "Mount up!" He followed his own order, and everyone but Talmanis scrambled into their saddles. Egwene passed a few words with Elaine and Nynaeve, while Vandine and Adelais went to speak to Shiryam. And then it was time, as quick as that, after all their dawdling. Matt half expected some sort of ceremony, with Egwene there in the Amarlin stole, but she and the others, who were not going, merely withdrew a little distance. Elaine stepped out, and suddenly there was a slash of light in front of her, widening into a hole. The view through it, what seemed to be a low hilltop covered in brown grass, rotating to a halt. Just like when Rand did it. Almost. "Dismount," Matt ordered. Elaine looked quite pleased with herself. You would never suspect the sort of woman she was from that delighted smile, asking Nynaeve and Avienda to share her pleasure. But pleased or not, the gateway was not as large as the one Rand had made for the band. Of course, there were not nearly so many as the band. But the least she could have done was make it tall enough to ride through. On the other side, low, rolling brown grass hills ran as far as Matt could see, even when he climbed back onto Pips, though a darkness to the south suggested forest. Dusty hills.
"We must not press the horses too hard in this," Adelais said, swinging quite easily onto her round bay mare as soon as the gateway vanished.
The animal looked as if it would be more at home in a barn.
"Oh, indeed not," Vandine said.
Her mount was a slab-sided black gelding that had a light step. The pair of them started south, motioning everyone to follow. The old warder rode right at their heels. Nynaeve and Elaine exchanged irritated looks, then booted their mares to catch the older women, hooves beating up dust until they were level. The yellow-braided hunter dogged them the way the warder did the other pair. Sighing, Matt undid the black kerchief around his neck and retied it over his nose and mouth. Much as he might enjoy seeing the older Aes Sedai teach those two to sit up straight, what he really wanted was an uneventful ride, a short stay in Ebu Dar, and a quick jump back to Saladar before Egwene did anything stupid and irretrievable. Women always gave him trouble. He did not understand it.
When the gateway winked out, Egwene sighed. Maybe Elaine and Nynaeve between them could keep Matt from getting into too much trouble. Keeping him out entirely was probably too much to ask. She felt a pang of regret for using him, but he might be some use where he was, and he had had to be gotten away from the band. Besides, he deserved it. Maybe Elaine would teach him a few manners. Turning to the others, the hall and Shiryam and her circle, she said, Now we must get on with what we're about. All eyes went to the Cairienan in the dark coat, just now mounting his horse near the trees. Talmanis, Egwene thought Matt had said his name was. She had not dared ask too many questions. He studied them for a moment and shook his head before riding into the forest. A man who means trouble if I ever saw one, Romanda said. Lelaine nodded. It will be well to put miles between ourselves and that sort. Egwene did not let herself smile. Matt's band had served its first purpose, but a great deal depended on exactly what orders Matt had left with this Talmanis. She thought she could depend on Matt in this. Swan said that man Vanin had rooted out things before she had a chance to put them under his nose, and if she was to come to her senses and run to the band for protection, then the band would have to be close to her. "Shall we go to our horses?" she said. "If we leave now, we should catch up to Lord Brynwell before sunset."